This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
It's the Draft Lottery Edition of the PatCast. Here we go. Presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. You know the drill if you've listened to the PatCast, and of course you've listened to the PatCast. But if you're in the market for a vehicle, we always say, check out Eagle Ridge GM. Start your search online, eagleridgegm.com, or see them at the showroom, 2595 Barnett Highway out in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. Jeff Patterson from TSN 1040, Jason Botchford of the Province. And Botch, I feel like we've sort of missed the mark here. We should have both dressed as ping pong balls for today's draft lottery edition of the PatCast.
I think that that's an old.
No.
Yes. They use ping pong balls?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, they do.
Really?
Can we get Drancer on the line? He's been in the room. He's seen it. He's witnessed. Yeah. People always think that this, there's this great mystery and maybe somehow the league's pulling a fast one behind the scenes.
Right.
But they put out video of the actual, if you want to see it, if you need to see it, they put out a video after the fact of casual Gary, no tie. They've got the accountants in there. He holds up the newspaper from that day to it's like the hostage taker guys, to authenticate that it's actually happening on that day. I've seen it before and we joke because Drancer found his way
into
the room. Yeah. So that was for last year's.
Definitely
draft
does not get, it should have been a meme all season long, really. If only he were here still and around Vancouver. Of course, if he were, he wouldn't have been in the room representing the Florida Panthers. He had just got the job, right?
Yeah.
And he had just got the job. And within weeks, he's in the most protected area in the NHL. He was allowed behind the closed doors. And there is an amazing picture of him sitting back in a big chair with other guys all sitting on the floor and stuff.
Yeah, he got a chair.
And observing.
Of course he got a chair.
Exactly what was happening. And of course what was happening was great disappointment again for the Vancouver Canucks, seemingly at the time. It all ended up working out just fine, though, I think.
Right. So here we go. We're inside, I was going to say about 48 hours, but now we found out that it's all going to be pushed back a little bit. So we got to be careful here on the podcast, too. We got to save a little bit for the end of the podcast, because that's where you apparently the great reveal has to come at the end.
Right.
Now.
Do have to separate 3 minutes.
Right.
And
so, I'm holding back.
I'll save something for those 3 minutes as well.
So see, now you got to stick it out right to the banner. I've got three great sort of hopes for this weekend. Obviously, we'll find out where the Canucks are picking. So that's one. And, whether they stay at six, whether they win the lottery finally, move up, whether they drop down a couple spots, whatever. By Saturday night, we're going to know where they will pick in the first round.
Right.
So, I'm looking forward to that. If they win the draft lottery, if they win one of these three lotteries within the lottery, if they move up to one of the top three spots, I want Jim Benning to moonwalk across the stage. This is a
But only one matters. The other two, they're not even going to be happy with the other two. They don't even want the other two.
They don't want two or three?
No.
But after what's happened the last couple of years and the look that Trevor Linden faced that, has become famous.
So even if they get third overall,
I want Jim Benning to moonwalk across the stage. Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right.
I want to see a fired up Jim Benning.
The problem is he's going to be moonwalking and he's going to, if they get third overall, he's going to, pull off his suit jacket and there's going to be a Kachuk jersey under it. And everyone's going to be aghast in Vancouver because.
Perfect. Serve it up. I want to see that.
All right.
I want to see that.
We want Brady.
The other one. And he's teased us these last couple of weeks, but I want the owner to live tweet.
Oh, he's
the
got
crap
it.
Out of this
he's
lottery.
We're expecting
that 15-point tweet is child's play. I want
the Frankie 15.
Yeah,
He's got to up.
You've come this far.
He's got to up it.
Just
because he continued. He tweeted something yesterday, right? Something really attempting to be inspirational or something about how
Jimmy Pattison's in his office at 4 in the morning, and There was congratulations to Brock Besser earlier in the week. Like, he hasn't let up since a couple weekends ago. He's been on a roll here. I just think this is all the warm-up act for the draft lottery, like, pick by pick. Like, I want live tweeting from Francesco on Saturday night.
He's hitting all, like, the Vancouver. Like, he's hit Uber. He hit Jimmy Pattison. Of course, Brock Besser. Like, what's left for him?
The civic election,
he's in on that. He needs a shot today with the blue skies and the mountains. Put that on and say, like, this is why we live here. He needs to add one of those.
He missed out on 420.
And
he had a perfect opportunity to get in all over 420.
And maybe he can give us a rundown on, like, his favorite sushi places.
Yeah.
I'm expecting big things from him on Saturday. There seems to be, for whatever reason, like, a lot of positivity around Vancouver about, like, I hear a lot of people saying, like, this is the year. I know it. I feel it. Like, we're going to win it. Even Brough, I was on with Halford and Brough yesterday, and Brough was saying, like, he thinks that they're going to, like, I don't know why, like, how people get these feelings that the Canucks are going to win the draft lottery, but it seems to me, like, a lot of places I go, people have this feeling, even though this is their worst odds of the three collective of worst seasons, where they've had the 217 points, no team has had fewer points, and it looks now likely that their top pick out of all these years will be number 5 overall, unless they win this lottery, and some people seem to think that they will. I don't know why.
See, I'm feeling differently. Like, and maybe it's because I don't go many places. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe I'm not talking to enough people these days. I've kind of gone underground since the season's ended. But I get a sense, like, all right, 2 years ago, it was Austin Matthews and Line A, and there was reason to really get excited. Like, the Canucks had the chance. It didn't happen for them. But the stakes were high because of Matthews and Line A. Last year, it was Heischer and Patrick. Like, the stakes, you know, winning the lottery. You wanted to win the lottery, obviously. And they had better odds because they were second to last year. But the prize wasn't as great.
Heischer's really good, though, man. Like,
I know, 52-point season. Fuck. No, I get that. Like,
Trevor's out there saying that we got the best player in the draft. Like, dude, like, hold on. Like, I'm not so sure on that. Like, we'll see how Pettersson and obviously a lot of us are, like, big fans of what Pettersson can do and what he's done this year in the Swedish Elite League, but Heischer did not bust. Like, he had a phenomenal first year.
Right. Like, and we'll get around to Besser and, you know, Rookie of the Year. I kind of feel like not enough people talk about Nico Heischer in the season that he had.
Right.
20 goals and 32 assists, a 52-point season. Like, everybody looks at Taylor Hall and the Devils, and Hall was amazing. But he sure did his part. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, so, like, when I ask Pete, and I've asked like some of the guys that look more in analytics, I've asked guys on other teams who are kind of in scouting roles. I asked them, like, if you were to redraft the 2017 draft, like, how would it play out? And most say, you know, Pettersson's probably number 3. Like, it probably goes Heischer, Patrick, and Pettersson. Heischer collectively almost to a person, they still say, and he was in the NHL, right? Like, in his draft plus 1 year, he had 50 points in his NHL. You understand, but they say that Heischer would still go first overall. And then there was the defenseman went, what, fourth, just before
Heiskanen went to Dallas.
Heiskanen went to Dallas and then Makar, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Heiskanen would be in the mix too. So it would be those four guys still at the top and all ahead of Makar. Who had a fine season. Like, he went from the Alberta Junior League into college hockey for UMass, and it was fine. They didn't have a great team, didn't have a lot of support from the defensemen behind him, and he was fine. But it wasn't as, it didn't take the next step that a lot of people thought he would have because of his potential. And the interesting comparison this year is Hughes, who has a lot of the similar attributes. I think is younger than Makar was last year. And obviously he's already in college hockey, and Makar was doing his thing in the in Alberta Junior League. And Hughes is going to be interesting. Like, I think that, like, up to now, a lot of mocks I've seen have had Hughes ahead of Boyquist. I think that that could change. And I think that the Canucks at 6 or 7 could still, Hughes could fall to them. Right. I could see a scenario happening there. And then, of course, the one scenario that we're all hoping for, or a lot of people are hoping for. They get Hughes this year.
Get the brother.
And then they get the brother next year.
Right, because as I've pointed out in
now
the past.
That's like, a team.
Yes.
You get those guys and you got a team.
Well, apparently you can build around brothers, I've heard, for decades in the National Hockey League. Because
they need a lot, man.
Like, I know.
I was fucking yelling about this on the Bruff Show. Like, too many people tell me the Canucks are okay up front. They've got the scoring. They don't need Zadina. They don't need this. Like, fuck no, dude. Like, look at these teams. And the one example – I used the Winnipeg example with those guys on Wednesdays when you look at their second line. But look at Boston. Look at that goal DeBrusque scored. No. Like, DeBrusque is phenomenal. DeBrusque is on their second line with Krejci. So, like, you need to be incredibly deep to have success in the playoffs. The Leafs are incredibly deep, especially up front. Their forward group obviously need help on the defense. Like, no fucking kidding, man. But even with – you know, four lines with weapons, offensive weapons on every line, they still couldn't get it done.
Just to double back quickly on my point about the sort of anticipation in this city, though. Like, I kind of feel like Canuck fans, at least the ones that I'm in contact with online and social and stuff, burned twice. Like, I just think people have accepted that they're not going to win. So
oh, wow.
I'm
hearing that people legitimately think they're going to win. Like you,
they're going to cash a 7.5% chance in and win this thing. Like, look, I hope they do too. Because I mean, do they need Rasmus Dahlin? Of course they do.
Interesting. But so you think that people have kind of just said,
yeah, screw it. Like, we're not going to win this thing. Yeah. We never win this thing.
All right.
And I do think that's part of why Trevor Linden opted to send Jimbo and Trevor just he'd had enough of that. Shot that's become famous of Trevor Linden face. Like,
right.
He just didn't want to go down that road again.
Like, people are saying it's superstition that I don't think, I just think that it's a shitty spot, like, to defend him. Like, it's a shitty spot to be in, to be standing, like, look what
cameras are trained on your face.
It's like
you know
ridiculous.
It.
they match up all these, like, big, high, you know, high paid executives to run this team, and they all look like douches, like, just total tools sitting there waiting for the results to come in so the camera can pan on you. Like, who would want that?
I don't know. And we found out now that Sportsnet is stretching this thing out, and we made reference to it earlier. But like, the actual...
So those guys going to have to sit there for hours?
I guess so.
In that fucking...
Like, it's, you know, for the TV aspect of it, like, there's so much more that they could do than have 15 executives in suits. Like, people were, jokingly, send Finn. Like, I would way rather see 15 mascots on stage than 15 guys.
I want to see? Like, legit, I want to see 15 fans. I want to see the fan, pick a fan.
Perfect.
Have a contest, pick the right fucking fan and have them out there. Let me see their real reaction. See the Canucks guy tearing out his hair, seeing the Flyer guys high five, whatever it is. I want to see a group of fans. And then also give them some alcohol.
I'm with you.
But that's what I'm saying.
Like, okay, so Sportsnet, it's their product, and they're stretching this thing now and trying to build the drama and, I guess, build an audience for the Sharks and the Golden Knights. Like, have people not been watching the Golden Knights? Would they not watch the Golden Knights?
I don't think so.
Apparently not. Anyway, so.
Because I would bet that if it were the Leafs, and it would have been if the Leafs had made it, if it were the Leafs playing Saturday, notice how all of this started coming out.
After the Leafs got punted.
Yeah. I mean, if the Leafs were in it, no one would fucking worry about, who's going to hang on to the second intermission. Like, you don't worry about ratings or bananas no matter what. So we wouldn't have heard any of this. It's just humiliating for these executives. Like, put the fans there. Like, there's no reason.
I like that.
And make it a party. Like, let them have some beers.
Turn it into a dance floor.
For the three winners at the end. Like, dancing.
Draft lottery / dating game. Sort of get some singles in there and, get them going, a little mingling.
And I gotta get the Leaf because I'm not gonna be able to concentrate if I don't get my fucking shit out about this Leaf series and what has gone on there and this criticism that Austin Matthews took for not appearing after game four to talk to the media. Like, I've said it before, but honestly, like, fuck the media sometimes. Like, fuck them because Austin Matthews, even if he came out after that game four, he doesn't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to someone who doesn't want to talk to us. I would love to talk to someone who's like, even tempered and this is what made the Sedin so great. You could have a dialogue. We could analyze plays. We could talk about their play. And sometimes they would have their spin and all the more power to them, but you could ask them any question. and they would do their best to give you an answer. That's what I want. If a guy is in and these games are emotional, they're difficult, they're passionate. If a guy is worried about what he – I don't think they hide generally. I think that what it is they're concerned if they come out what they might say. They may say the wrong thing. They're too amped up. And if he's not comfortable in that situation coming out and having a dialogue with the media, I don't want the short three-word answers. Right. Like, just stay. Like, fuck, I'll talk to you another day. Don't worry about it. You got today off. You don't have to come out. And the media gets all worked up, like, oh, he didn't appear. He didn't appear, like, as though that this is some kind of weakness of his character. I don't see it that way. I think that they use these quotes and comments as a crutch. Work your way around it. Talk your way around it. Find other things to talk about. Find other players to talk to. Don't worry about it, man. Like, don't fucking criticize players. Like, this is my belief that if you act like the Sedins and you come out there and you take all the bullets and you represent your team, you deserve all the praise in the world. And I can't give those guys enough praise for what they did in those situations. But in turn, if a player every once in a while isn't comfortable doing it, like, let him be. Like, he's 21, like, or whatever he is. They're in their 20s. They're not emotionally capable of dealing with these huge moments all of the time and coming out and discussing in a very reasonable way where they don't throw anyone under the bus and they don't light the fire of something that's going to be talked about forever. Like, I think Luongo, is in that Boston series in 2011. Is a good example, and he's talked about it a lot since, where the emotions got the best of him. He didn't know exactly what he was saying. He didn't word things the right way, and things blew up. They probably shouldn't have blown up, and they did, but they did.
Yep.
And his comments, that fucking tire pumping shit, was pointed to as a reason that they lost the series.
People still talk about it.
Which is ridiculous, man. Which is totally ridiculous. So if you're going to learn anything from that, you're going to, as a player, if you look at history and say, okay, like, look what happened to Luongo, where the emotions got the best of him. He said things he didn't really want to word that way. I'm taking tonight off. I don't want to talk to the media. Fine. Fine. The media should be fucking fine with that. And instead of worrying about what fucking Austin Matthews is going to say after game four, start asking questions to Babcock, which they never do, about why he only played 17 and a half minutes a game for the series. He averaged 17:32. You know who averages 17 and a half minutes a game?
I do.
Who?
Brandon Sutter.
Fuck! That would be my first question. Send me to Toronto. Dude, do you know that Brandon Sutter averages 17 and a half minutes and you just played seven games with one of the best players in the game averaging 17 and a half minutes? What do you got to say to that, Babs?
I want
to
see the lights dim and you come up with like a PowerPoint presentation. Babs, look at this. Over here. And you like the big pointer or digital, like the laser right. pointer.
So don't worry about Austin Matthews and what stupid cliches he's going to give you after the game. Focus, like, try to, like, sometimes, like, so, there are some people in the media here in Vancouver, like, Fast Debbie, Ebner would do this, like, let's get together and figure out what our strategies here are. What are the talking points we need to ask this coach in big moments, right?
Right.
I thought it was super weird at first when he did it. Like, I thought, like, we're going to collectively get together and come up with a plan. Like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But after a while, I learned to really like it. I honestly miss these huddles that he'd have now.
Bring back Ebby.
Yeah, because sometimes you do need to bounce shit off other people.
Well, we found that on the road as the numbers thin out and there's only a couple of us. Like, there were a few nights along the way where you're just like, damn, I wish, we could call a timeout, have a little group huddle and, you know, come up with a line of questioning.
Right.
That's what we use the elevator rides for, essentially.
Yeah, so I ended up missing that. And I think that if Toronto media had the huddle, they could figure out things like, we got to ask Babs why Austin Matthews wasn't on this power play. Why didn't they use him after this TV timeout? And there were some weird decisions that went on during that series that I thought, like, this needs to be asked after the game. And, of course, none of it is ever asked.
Yeah. But I think that whole lament about a guy didn't talk, it's from the same small group always. And 5 or 10 years from now, you won't hear that because I do think, as you point out, the way post-game is handled, the way these games are covered, it is changing. It's evolving. There's no question it is. And so I just think I'm with you. Like, and you and I are on the front line. We're in there on a nightly basis, not in the Leafs room, but with the Canucks. Like, and we've joked about, like, you go a whole season without hearing from Louis Erickson. Like, big deal.
Right?
Like,
what's he going to give you?
Yeah. So, you know, you write the occasional story. Maybe you'd get a chance to talk to him. You talk to the coach or the GM or whatever if you're writing your Erickson story. But post-game, you're getting nothing. And so you move on to the next guy that's there. I mean, it is one of the reasons that Jacob Markstrom sort of became fascinating post-game. You know, you just never – emotions did get –
He was great after losses.
Right, but emotions got the better of him, and you were never quite sure where it was going to go to the – you know, where it reached its point, the high point in Carolina, where, you know, he said what he said about guys maybe not being able to play in the NHL or play – I don't want to –
Be careful.
I know, exactly. Yeah, can we wind that back? Guys that weren't playing good enough at that point to be playing in the National Hockey League. Careful. But it was a great quote, and it got a lot of play.
And he was great after losses, so he became a go-to guy after losses.
But the problem with goalies is, and guys still ask him about the power play and like stuff that's going at the other end. Like,
you're right.
Yeah, he's got a good vantage point. He's got one of the best seats in the house, but I never understand asking, you know, a team's goalie about his own team's power play. Like, he's got nothing to do. He can't add anything about the power play.
I have such a pet peeve about those Markstrom post-game after-losses scrums because there can be so much great stuff you can harvest from him and notice that the best stuff happened when he was on the road and there were very few of us asking him pointed questions about plays and what happened and all that. I don't like when we're at home and then all the cameras get around him, the TV guys get around him, and you're right, like Farhan and whoever are asking like these big picture and it's not always Farhan, like guys in that scrum are asking these big overarching big picture questions. And I'm like, dudes, we only have about 5 fucking questions.
And you before can see him bubbling.
We got 5.
Like, stoke that fire!
We got 5 before he checks out. Right. Each one has to build.
Yeah.
And that's, again, where if we would have the Ebner Fast Ebby huddle, we could say, okay, you go down this. I'm going to try to lay some bricks over here, and let's build this foundation and ask this guy some good questions that are going to provide us with some really great answers. Because that's what you should be after. You should be after great answers, and there's no way – Austin Matthews was going to give anyone any great answers after that Game 4, didn't want any part of it, and that's fine. And there's lots of games where I look at, for instance, Bo Horvat. Not great after losses. I don't really want to talk to him after losses because he's not going to give me good answers. He's just not a guy that's going to wants to break down what went wrong here and why did you do that. He's just not into it.
Yeah.
I can go to Troy Stetcher, and he can tell me exactly where he should have been, what should have happened, where the puck should have gone, and he's great in those situations. So you got to know the personality of these guys. And if the Canucks ever make it to a playoff series and if we're ever covering one, like, fuck, like, knock on wood, man, it's got, like, I'm missing all of this excitement, right? Like, I feel left out. Like, I want to be a part of this. I want to be arguing with, like,
I'm with you.
Ken Campbell about, like, criticizing Austin Matthews. I want to be out on Twitter just fucking hammering guys. You know, all those battles that go on in the media. And, of course, the whole idea that there's some gravitas to the games you're covering and all these decisions and the coaches' moves and all that stuff. Like, I'm filled with questions and I'm ready to go, right? Like, it's been 3 years.
Airlift bought you in.
And
let's
I'm amped to get in there. So if we ever are covering a series again, you know, I will know that there are games where there's no sense in going to Bo Horvat. He's not going to give me anything. Let him go. If he doesn't want to talk on a night, so fucking what?
Right. But I've seen now, like, there's people drawing this line from Austin Matthews didn't speak after Game 4 to he can never be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs because he didn't answer questions.
Right.
Like, was he great in the series? No. But there are a number of reasons for that. Give the Bruins some credit. The matchups. You know, he was in tough. He's seen a lot of Bergeron. He's seen Chara. This is a young guy. Like, he'll get back. I don't worry.
And injured, too.
And then, miles away from it. I'm not worrying about Austin Matthews. He's on a path to greatness in the National Hockey League. These are all learning experiences for him. But I just, it is funny that sometimes the focus that comes out of these series and the takeaways, and it's that this, like, forget the fact that he didn't produce. It's that he didn't speak after Game 4. And here we sit 7 years removed from the Canucks run in 2011. And, like, what are the 3 greatest takeaways from that series against the Boston Bruins? the riot, Marchand punching Daniel Sedin, and Luongo's quotes. Like, seriously, in that order, like, people 7 years after the fact still talk about pumping the tires.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
No, you're right. And he still regrets. I even saw a story. And his greatness gets lost because, even like that situation and that series. And, he didn't have a great game six. Like, I think four goals in the first 9 minutes. Like, and the first one was Marchand down the wing, weak side over his shoulder. Like, it was just not a great goal. He didn't have a great series, but next year at some point, if he stays healthy, he will set the record for the most saves ever out of anyone ever to play the game. And I was reading a story, and all the Parkland stuff happened this year. I was reading a story, I think it was Bruce Arthur, and it was just one of the stories that was out there. And he revisited like 2011 and the anguish and the regret Luongo had and how it changed him and all these things. And I'm thinking, like, fuck, like, that was so long ago. This guy is having a Vezina. Like, if he was healthy the whole year, he would have been a Vezina finalist. He's doing it at this, like, how old is he? Is he 38, 39?
39 now.
39? Like, it's fucking amazing what he's, and it was all lost in this story. Like, how incredible his season was, how incredible his longevity has been, how incredible his consistency has been. Like, he's had, when he was in Vancouver, I remember his career save percentage was 919. Still to this fucking day, it's 919. He will go down as one of the best save percentages of all time. And the tire pumping and the comments and the seawall walk, you lose sight. Like, this is one of the greatest goalies of his generation, right there with Lundqvist, and one of the greatest goalies of all time.
Now, to have the record for most saves in the National Hockey League, like, damn, you got to play on some bad teams for a while to face that much traffic.
For a long time.
And he did early in Florida, but then, I mean, he was the glory years of the Canucks, and the Panthers have been all right since. No, I mean, it's remarkable. Like, I hope he's able to play out this entire contract. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if his body's going to hold up. But, like, the season that he had, and they were that close to making the playoffs, and, you know, for his sake, I wish they had got in. I was kind of pulling for them to get in just to give him a chance to play some more playoff hockey.
Yeah, and they barely, and guess what? Like, two of the guys, Canucks Army had a big piece analyzing everything that went down in Florida, and they very easily could have been in a situation where they had guys in Riley Smith and Marchessault who could have helped them score the extra goals they would have needed to get those guys into the playoffs and get Luongo into the playoffs. And can you imagine if this is like they don't, there's injuries or whatever. Like, I think that they have a great, like, a really good core of a team. Like, I love Barkov. Like, I think he's incredible. And they leaned on him heavy down. Like, he was playing like a defenseman down the stretch. But can you imagine if this were as close as Luongo gets in his later years and he misses the playoff because Dale Talon came in and wanted to undo all of this stuff that that some really smart people had put together and some smart options that they had. And he basically just gave away two players that could have made the difference this year to get that team into the playoffs.
And we've made the point before here on the podcast, like, that Florida team is a middle-of-the-road team that didn't make the playoffs and yet beat the Canucks both times they played head-to-head, have a bunch of component parts. Like, as I watch the playoffs again, like, 300-plus point teams got punted in the first round. Leafs had 105, I think. Here are the Canucks with 73 points. Like, there is still – it comes back to your point about, like, you know, everything. They need everything.
Oh, yeah. Like, Florida's a great example.
Yeah. And so the gap between the Panthers, who are knocking on the door, and the Canucks and where they are – and, again, I've seen a lot of people leading into this lottery talking about, you know, if they hit and if they win the lottery, like, look at New Jersey, look at Colorado, they're in the playoffs. Taylor Hall carried New Jersey. Nathan MacKinnon carried the Colorado Avalanche. You know, Philadelphia Flyers were close to making the playoffs last year. You know, they had Giroux, they had Voracek, they had Couturier, they all had, like, elite scorers. Like, this idea that if the Canucks win the lottery somehow, they're going to bounce 25 points and be in the playoff picture. I still think the Canucks are 3 years away. I think two more years without the playoffs for sure, and then in that third season, maybe.
Right. I've talked about it before. I think that they should be open about saying we have a 3 to 5 year plan. Like, what's, and if the team is not relevant and contending in 5 years, they should all quit. They should say it's the 3 to 5 year plan. And guess what, Vancouver? Trevor Linden should step up and say, guess what, Vancouver? If in 5 years we do not have a great team that we feel can contend every year for the playoffs, I'm done. I got to walk away. Because that's like 9 years. Like, if we're still like talking about draft lotteries 5 years from now, every year, like, you got to quit. You got to like, if the owners won't fire you, you have to leave. Like, that can't happen. I think people would be open to the team saying, like, we got a 3 to 5 year plan. I think that covers everyone's bases. 3 years, like, that's as soon as you can reasonably expect the team. And if it happens before, you look fantastic. And you also have the 5 year thing on there where it's like 9 years into your term and you still don't have a good team. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying, like, this is going to be a relevant contending team that has a chance to win in 3 to 5 years. And now, if you say that, now you can look at things and be like, now how do, and I started this thing, build the army. Like, how do you build the army? Like, how do we get as many prospects and many young guys who can kind of blossom together in that 3 to 5 year time span to help Pettersson, to help Horvat, to help Besser? Because these guys need a supporting cast. And what you've seen from all the teams that are still in it, and even the teams, some of the teams that miss, like Florida, they all have like really good supporting cast to help the big time players. They all mostly have like either really good second pairings, like Nashville's loaded on D, to other teams like the Jets and the Bruins, who have like crazy great second lines, to Tampa, which has all these, you know, great offensive, creative forwards, combined with a big defense that helps them, helps protect and insulate them. Like, these are really well-built teams. To get the Canucks to be a well-built team, they need a lot of pieces that includes draft picks and prospects.
So let's go back to the Leafs for a second, and I don't want to spend the whole podcast here talking about the Leafs, but there is this connection, because for 2 years, we've been drumming up the trade Tanev Club, and I mean, the whole world just watched the Toronto Maple Leafs get exposed, 7 goals in a game 7, goaltending wasn't good enough, and Anderson was good for most of that series, but didn't like a handful of the goals that got in on him last night. But there are issues, there have been issues on that right side, on the Toronto, like, it makes way too much sense, Botch, here, for these two organizations to get together and finally make something happen.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Like, and people often ask, I've seen people ask, like, why do you guys always talk about Toronto when it comes to Tanev? Well, I think there are a couple of reasons for it. One, Toronto is interested. Toronto desperately needs him. If Tanev could stay healthy for an 82 game schedule in a playoff, I can't imagine there be too many players out there who would help the Leafs more than what Chris Tanev could do. Solidifying like a shutdown second pairing a group, or playing with Riley on what could potentially be like a really good top pairing in the NHL. So I think for so many reasons he fits. The Leafs have had interest, do have interest, and Tanev, who has this year and another year left on his contract, that's one of the places. Like, I don't think he's too keen on staying in Vancouver, and it's already been out there whether or not he'd be willing to sign an extension in Vancouver. I personally doubt it. I think that Toronto is one of the places that he would say, yeah, like, I was part of this program, Markham, all of those things. Like, this is a place where I'd be willing to sign a 5-6 year deal.
Come on, Mike Tanev. Pull those strings. Be the broker. I know. Well, we saw it at the practice there in Toronto.
I promise you. Those guys in Toronto know, and Mike works, he talks to the media, he's talking to agents. Like, that's a very active, like, Tanev's got his agent, and then he's got his dad out there making moves.
Yeah, well, that day of practice, like, Stan Smeal got the full Mike Tanev treatment for, like, 45 minutes.
And he beelined to Friedman, too.
Oh, yeah.
He had Friedman.
Elliot! Okay, just, like, summon Friedman of all... Elliot! Step into my office.
Come here.
We gotta talk.
Right. So... And I do think that let me put it this way, if you're in Mike's shoes and you're looking at Chris getting a big contract coming up after next season, could you not possibly see how in Vancouver, his value is going to be, there's a governor on it.
And there's a governor on it for a couple of reasons. One, he's on a really bad team, so he doesn't get the bright lights of the playoffs. He doesn't get to perform. Like, he's the type of guy, I think, whose play would really stand out. Like, that's when Ham Hughes got the most run. When that team was in the playoffs and he was doing his thing, we all, like, I think collectively as a city, people had this, like, holy shit, like, this guy is really right. good moment. And you can see over the course.
Still hear people say, if Ham Hughes doesn't go down,
right, they win.
Yeah,
they win
another takeaway from that
right,
series.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's when people really fell in love with Ham Hughes as a player. And I think Chris Tanev would have that potential if he were to make the playoffs. And I obviously think that he'd be a good, healthy, be a huge benefit to a really good team. So I think that there's a governor on him for that reason. I think there's also the injury thing is a problem, but on a good team that has the puck more than 50% of the time, he's not going to be in all these situations where he's got to block this many shots and he's got to take this many hits. All of a sudden that drops by, 15%, maybe 25%, maybe even by a third. And you've got a guy who potentially can miss some of these fluke situations where he's got hurt. So I think he has a better chance of staying healthy on a good team. I think he has a better chance of shining on a good team. And I obviously has a better chance of getting the collective hype of the national media, especially the attention of those in Toronto, like Friedman and all those other guys who, Friedman talks about Tanev, but there's not a lot of guys in the national media that spend a lot of time breaking down Tanev and explaining what makes him good and why he's been so effective.
But I do think that's going to change now. A second year in a row, a first round exit for the Leafs, and the common denominator is that defense isn't good enough. They've got a ton up front they need to address. That's why I go, forget like just Tanev, like package up Tanev and Gudbranson. Like give them both to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here you go. That
and
right
Hutton,
side.
Can I send them?
There might
too.
Be a way to, yeah, all these Ontario guys is like, there you go, airlift coming in. I'm just worried that Mike Tanev might be preoccupied because Brandon's now into the second round with the Jets.
That's
and like
right.
attention is, divided, or maybe it's not. Maybe he's leaving Chris in the shadows now and it's all like locked onto Brandon and what the Jets are going to do in the second round. But there's no question that the Leafs have to address certainly the right side. Like it seems to make way too much sense. So I know a lot, like we throw a lot of crap out there, but this is one that it has to have some
it's
legs.
This one has momentum. This one has legs. And it's not just the Toronto connection. I think in Vancouver, there are a lot of people in the Tanev when people were in the Tanev camp were looking at the Vancouver situation and everyone thought, and the following the team and close to the team and insiders, everyone thought Gudbranson early in January was going to get moved. That was flipped on its ear when Gudbranson signed his extension. Eyebrows were raised in that kind of Tanev collective. And I think for the first time, his group, the Canucks, everyone looked at it and said, this could happen. This isn't last year where the Canucks sat, Jim, arms crossed, sat at his desk, leading into the draft, looking at his phone, waiting for it to ring. And then at the draft said, well, no one really called on Tanev. Well, dude, if you're going to trade the guy,
phones work two ways.
The other way.
You got that keypad there. You dial out and you make
There's going to be some dialing out this time.
There has to be. I watched that first round of the playoffs. And for me, one of the things that sticks with me is 30 different defensemen scored at least one goal in the first round of the playoffs. And, we heard Travis Green there on that final media availability, like, we need more offense from our defense. Like, goals are being scored around the NHL by defensemen in the playoffs, too. You saw Torrey Krug last night. Like, it just keeps tracking back to, like, how are the Canucks going to overhaul this defense? And that might be the biggest watch for me. And I guess it starts on Saturday with the draft lottery, and we'll see what happens there. And wherever they're going to pick, like, we'll have a sense of, who they can target. Although I don't expect, if they don't get Dahlin in the draft,
right?
I'm not expecting whoever they get, 6, 7, 8, to step in and play next year.
No.
So, again, how do you overhaul this defense that wasn't good enough this year and hasn't been for a while?
I think they'll try to force Yolevi into the lineup, for one. I think that they'll definitely look in free agency, too. And I'm not so sure. Like, I think their focus, if it's a trade, one of their focuses will be trying to find the center. Because they do, obviously, the area that you've pinpointed here is a critical one for the Canucks. They need to find ways to get offense out of their D. Like, that's not really a problem for the Leafs. Like, Jake Gardner is getting all this criticism. Like, he had 52 points this season.
Riley had, I think, 40.
Can you imagine if, like, a fucking 52-point young guy, a guy in his 20s in Vancouver? Like, we would not care. And he was that DeBrusque, like, he was – like, Ben Hutton wishes he was that tough on a player. Like, he – at least he hit him and knocked him over, and, like, DeBrusque made a great play. You know, you haven't seen Ben Hutton do too many plays like that over the course of the season. So that's how low things are. Like, I looked at that Gardner game and I was like, that play looks okay to me. Like, that would be great here in Vancouver if, like, Ben Hutton could knock a guy over going to the net. But we, all of us would love to see a 50 point. Like, we would hail the guy. We'd be on bended knee. Like, oh my God, you're a god. 50 points from a defenseman. We wouldn't be able to believe it. And the Leafs have Liljegren still coming. They got Grundstrom, who just arrived, you know, was just parachuted into this Marlies Comet series, which is still going on. And they got young Dermott, who scored a goal. Like they've been able to find, like, that team is really well set. Like, they have the best AHL team, a team that is up 2-1 against the Comets without three of their best players, including their star this season in Janssen. And they've got like four guys or five guys on that team that could probably be young guys who could probably be playing in the NHL right now, including their goalie Sparks. So that's the kind of collection that you got to be thinking, like, how do the Canucks build? Like, what does the farm system have to look like? How many really good young players do they need? And the answer is a fucking lot. Like, they need a lot. They need a lot. So, But good on the Comets, though, getting back into that series. Have you been able to follow that at all?
I have, through the fine work of Ed Willis, who was dispatched to Toronto first. And did he go to Utica first and then Toronto and then back to Utica, or did he just go into –
I think he went Toronto.
Going to Toronto first. I mean, that would make sense.
Chilled in the weekend for Toronto and then went to Utica and talked about Utica as a market. And the Canucks seem to be backing that idea.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a sec. All Podcast, as always, presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you know, spring is here now. Sun is shining. Great day to get out and walk the lot and see what's there. And there's lots there. Eagle Ridge GM, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, and the showroom and the lot at 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam. Still ahead, and we will get to Elias Pettersson and his season, and just unbelievable the way he wrapped up the playoffs. So we'll touch on Pettersson. Want to touch on Brock Besser as well. The Calder finalists were revealed earlier in the week, but you brought up Utica, so let's go there. And they are still alive with a big win. Darren Archibald back in town to drop the ceremonial face-off to get the crowd into it. And I'm hearing and reading about, you know, this love affair with the city, and yet I saw tickets were still available ahead of game three. So I'm not quite sure where the truth lies in all of that. But I would imagine now that they've won, and it's a best of five, so one more win, and they send it back to Toronto for a fifth and deciding game and see what happens there. But I would think that the fans would be all in on a Friday night. You wrote about Lukas Jašek, who, like every Canuck, is now hurt. So he arrived on the scene, but you had a fascinating tale about sort of, just how deep this guy had been buried over in the Czech Republic climb and claw his way out, sort of the cloak of darkness and everything, to come overseas at the age of 19 to follow his dream. It was a fascinating read.
Yeah, I mean, he gets drafted, and I didn't know anything about Jašek. I knew that the Canucks Army guys, like, loved him. I think JD, like, tweeted about him for, like, weeks and months, and it became, like, almost a meme in itself, where he said that he was the best draft pick of the year, and he talked about him being, like, a star in the World Juniors, and at some points I was reading and thinking, like, fuck, Jašek is going to be the best player of all time, maybe for the Vancouver Canucks, and then right after that next year, he just disappeared. And it wasn't just to me, or it was, I mean, to the team, to the Canucks. Like, he just fell off a map. And it's because he was stuck on this club team, the team he grew up playing in the Czech, their top league there. And those guys, there's a certain amount of young players that they have to play in the lineup regularly, my understanding is. And they would use them to get that quotient up. And they were playing him like 7 minutes a game. He wasn't on the power play, wasn't killing penalties. And when they didn't want to play him, like, I think he only played like half the games that year, like 20 something games, something like that. And when they knew that they weren't going to play him for a few games, they would send him down to his junior team Okay. So the, on the club. So they'd send him down to, and then they'd work his ass off. They'd have him play like 21 minutes, like in the, you know, three games and call him back up to the top team. And, like the, it was brutal travel. It was a brutal situation. He was, you know, they're kind of riding him on this junior team. He wanted out. He wanted nothing more than to get to North America. He wasn't able to do it. And he was stuck on this, in this situation for, 2 years. And in fact, total in 3 years. But after the second year, he went to Walsh and he basically hired a new agent. Well, he did. And he said, like, look, you got to get me out of this. And they couldn't. I mean, he was stuck there. The Canucks tried to lean on the Czech teams to get him into the CHL. That was no good. They wouldn't loan him over. And eventually they worked out a deal where at the end of this past season, they would loan him or let him go to sign an amateur tryout with Utica in the hopes that it would, could lead to an NHL contract. Now, once he signed an NHL contract, he was free from all these
right.
Czech obligations. Yeah. But the problem up to that point, as you know, after his draft year, like I said, he disappeared. There was nothing for the Canucks to look at and say, like, okay, we're going to save you. Like, here's your life preserver. We're going to sign you to this NHL contract. You can't just waste a contract on a guy that's playing 7 minutes that you're like, fuck, he was a 6th round pick. Like, is this the right pick? Like, what? There was just no evidence for them to be able to sign him. So it was all riding on him in these games, in this amateur tryout games. And there was, like, I don't think I totally reflected the pressure that was on him in these games, because from that draft year, he desperately wanted nothing more than to play in North America. He couldn't do it. He hired the new agent. He said, like, please, like, I don't understand why I'm stuck in this situation. Just get me out. They worked out the deal where he goes to Utica for the six games. Now, if he played poorly, if Call had benched him, if he didn't play, if the Canucks didn't sign him, he would have been back on that Czech club team for another year. That was the scenario for him. He had 6 or 7 games to go fucking show the Canucks in this organization that he was worthy of an NHL contract. Now, it all worked out great, and credit to him, and he was great 5-on-5. I mean, it's amazing. He scored like 2 game-winning goals. Like, it's an incredible story that he showed up with this small window for years. All he wanted to do is get to North America. He shows up. He's got this little tiny window to prove to the hockey world, to prove to the organization he's deserved a contract, and he delivered.
My favorite part of all of this, though, was so he plays in game 1 of the series against the Marlies. And now we found out after that he's hurt. So he doesn't play in game 2. Dolan plays in game 2. But here's this guy that's been out of sight, out of mind, hasn't been on Canuck fans' radar in 2 years. Right. And now there's just this massive outrage that he's not right. playing in game 2 of the playoffs.
But because you understand why, like one, it's an incredible story, which I just
like Canuck fan base. That's part of it.
Like, well, all of it, he looked like a prospect. He was a young guy who was having success, and then fucking Cole is going to bench him. I was throwing stuff too.
Oh, come on.
Talk about, like, I wanted 2 times. I wished I was in Toronto. 1, to ask Babs Matthews questions.
And race across town.
2, to ask Cole, like, why the hell, like, I was throwing stuff in my house. My wife's like, what is wrong with you? Why are you so mad? I'm mad because Yashik isn't in the lineup. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? You didn't even know what are you talking about, Yashik? But he's got to, like, Cole benches Dallin in game 1. I see Yashik being scratched in game 2. And all I could think was, I got to get there to grill Cole. Like, this is ridiculous. How is Ed not writing about, or how is this not a topic for everyone?
But Cole knew because Reed Boucher came back.
Well,
and scored.
That's true. But Yashik was hurt.
He is, apparently.
Yeah. So then I calmed down at that point. If he were healthy, I was close to, like, paying my own way just to ask him questions.
I saw Ed wrote about, you know, mentorship again. This organization they lead all of professional sports in mentorship. Like,
who's doing the mentoring?
Oh, Lacey Banks? Hamilton and Carter Banks and, yeah, a few other guys.
Oh, my God.
Like, I watched, you know, look at the Bruins. You talk about DeBrusque and McAvoy and Pastrnak. Just turn them all loose. Like, all these kids are all right. Turn the kids loose.
Like, Marchand's a dick. And, like, all their young players develop better than any young players on any team. Like, they're loaded with draft picks from 2014. Like, DeBrusque is falling around Marchand. He's fine. fuck, he's great. He's had an amazing year. Everyone doubted him at the draft. Talk about draft and developing a guy. He developed into a phenomenal player. And Marchand is his big, like, what are Carter, like, how do they mentor? Like, showing them what to do off the ice? And
yeah, like, to me, it's sort of, like, I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, like, you're asking career minor leaguers to mentor, you know, your gold, your like blue chippers, your gold A level prospects. Like, so on that level, I have like, there's a disconnect for me, right? Like, you're asking Jonathan Dolan, okay, you come, you play in Utica, watch this guy that I think he played two games in the NHL. And, you know, he's still earning a like, paycheck playing professional hockey. Like, I'm not discounting him, but it just, there's a part of me that says, like, these guys are, I know they're teammates in Utica, but they're worlds apart, right?
Yeah, I know.
So just again, this idea of mentorship, mentorship, mentorship. When Elias Pettersson arrives in Vancouver, like, he's going to be way closer to Bo Horvat in age and just, you know, the thought process of guys. And
Brandon Sutter better not be his mentor, or Del Zotto.
Well, but that's...
And someone was making the point to me yesterday. They said, like, you realize that fat Ben Hutton outplayed Del Zotto all season long. Like, imagine if Hutton could get into shape. Like, he was outplayed by a guy who the coach kept healthy scratching 13 times and kept saying is out of shape. And he still outplayed Del Zotto, and that's your mentor? Him and Sutter? I don't want Sutter anywhere near Pettersson. Don't like Del go near him. There's got to be like some rule about that. I want him on the other side of the locker. I want him with Besser. Like, Pettersson and Besser can be like as close as thieves.
I'm just picturing like those electric fences that they have for dogs. Like, put one around like Sutter's stall so that Pettersson can't go.
No, and when they're having the meetings. Yeah. And they're like going over the video. It's like, okay, Green's got to announce we're getting to the Sutter portion of things.
Elias, please leave
and
the room.
Sutter did some great things, but Pettersson, you're not going to be able to see him. We don't want you anywhere near these great things that Sutter did.
That's the beauty of the iPad, though. Like, they can process each guy individually, can get his own set of clips, so they can send Pettersson.
Don't mix up the iPad.
And I hear that I saw somewhere that Travis Green was among the interested spectators in Utica last night. So the coach is down there. He's watching. He's getting a firsthand account of what's going on. And one of Ed's stories, too, was, and you referenced it, how much the Canucks love the city of Utica and their arrangement, which expires at the end of next season. Right. So there's one more year to go. And we know there was all that talk about Abbotsford at one point, and
Coliseum. They checked out the Coliseum as well. Yeah. That was an option.
I mean, Rogers Arena, Winnipeg plays its games out of its own rink too. The Aquilinis own Rogers Arena. I don't know if there's an appetite to play AHL games in the city of Vancouver, but you've got a building there and you could share, you know, resources and weight rooms and those types of things. But listening to or reading Ed's piece, which quoted Trevor Linden, who's there in Utica for the series as well, like, the love affair exists, and they always point to practice time.
Right.
Practice time. Right. And again, I can look on a map and see Syracuse and Rochester and all these cities that are, you know, within a bus ride. They can be back home after games and get practice time. And there is a benefit to practice at that level. Mm-hmm. But it just, again, when we talk about mixed messages, you know, I saw somewhere in the piece the Canucks pointed to 39 full practice days at the big league level. You and I were there.
No way.
They may have had 39 practice days, like days to practice, but they did not practice 39 times over the course of the season.
You got to keep count next
year. I know.
Year
I kind of feel like I do.
Because it felt like in the second half of the season, there were, like, I'm not even kidding. It felt like six or seven, like January.
Talking game-based skates here. We're talking full practice days.
But almost every game day skate was an optional. So that wasn't, you can't.
No. We're talking practice.
January, February, and March. In the last 6 weeks, there could have only been more than three or four. There definitely was not one a week.
Right. Because it became an issue with Patrick Holm. Remember, he needed practices. Right. And for the longest time, there weren't practices. Like, they were playing games, but there weren't practices.
Philip.
But he got caught in the he needs practice time.
Right.
But then whether it was Archibald or Gaudette or whoever, they get brought, Leipzig gets traded in the lineup 19 minutes. So some guys needed practice time, others didn't. But that number jumped off the page when it was pointed out there were 39 practice days over the course of the season. And you're right. In the second half, and especially in the last month when it looked like – and that's kind of ironic too. In the last month, they didn't practice, and yet they finished the season on a 6-1-2. They had their best stretch of the season with no practices.
I think that this topic is worthy of debate. I think that I'll concede the point that a team in Utica is going to be able to practice more. But what I didn't like were the comments from the Canucks, which kind of omitted one of the big developments of recent years. And that's there's a whole division in California now. And there wasn't when they made the decision that didn't exist when they made the decision to move to Utica. So definitely things have changed. I don't know if they've changed dramatically enough to bring the potential practice time in line. I sure know that there are advantages to proximity, and it's why there is a division in California, because teams want to be close to their farm club. And there are, I think there are a host of reasons for it. I think that you, like, for instance, if there was if the Canucks had their farm club here, they could be monitored by their training and strength staff. There's lots of opportunity for engagement from management to go over and the exchange of ideas constantly with the, you know, Green is there right now. Green could go to games all the time. Yep. If you're here in Vancouver and checking out these guys and getting not having to talk to Cull and getting his take on who's playing well and who's not playing well. I think that the team in proximity, if it's closer, has more. I think that it has more influence. It has more influence if Jim's there all the time or Trevor's there all the time. And I think that there are development advantages, and you just don't go any further than Thatcher Demko and the kind of travel schedule that he had to go through just to get to Vancouver to play this one game. Now, he saw immense value in playing that one game. Now, other teams, and this has become increasingly a popular modern development technique for young goalies, is that 22, 23-year-old goalies are used as backups for starters who are expected to play 55, 60 games, like Markstrom will be. And when you know that your starter, say Markstrom, is going to go on a long run of starts, you can flip, switch Backman. Like, let's say Demko starts the year as his backup, plays a couple games early in the season, you can flip Backman and Demko, for example, to pick one and send Demko back to the Abbotsford Comets, and he can play a string of games there, and then he can come back to the Canucks after, and he can go back and forth. And a lot of teams, Nashville did it, there's a lot of teams that did this, that it's a really effective way to get young goalies used to playing in the NHL while also getting them a significant amount of playing time. That's all but impossible with the Vancouver situation with Utica. There is no distance greater than that one. Like, I saw people point out, like, I don't know what are the furthest ones, but someone was pointing out Edmonton and Bakersfield to me. But still, Edmonton, that's a 2-hour drive out of LA. There's all kinds of direct flights to LA for sure. Like, Utica is crazy. It's like an hour and something drive to Syracuse. Right. Then you got to get to Syracuse and figure out how to get to Vancouver. Well, that's either going to Chicago or it's going through Toronto. It's multiple flights. It's a long drive to get there. There's no other situation like it. So for the team, for a player, if the Canucks are missing a defenseman and they have an opportunity to bring up Brisbois, they can't bring him up for a game, you know, or if they have a forward spot that they could use a young forward for, let's say Dallin's down in the minors next year and they've got a game or two on their third line where they're missing a guy, they're going to be reluctant to bring Dallin and give him those situations because of the travel. And if the team were here and the minor league team was at home, it would be very easy. Just, hey, come on over. Like, let's play a couple of games here.
Right. And we've seen this before, that when you do get a call up, and Demko's a good example, like, his travel day was ridiculous for a 1 o'clock start too. That game that he played against Columbus, like, it was all day, like, good on him. And he even said after the game, like, I don't know if it was a good thing that it was a 1 o'clock start. He said, my body didn't know what time it was. Right. It was just, you know, game time. But there were other examples of that too. So you're asking an awful lot of these guys who would crawl from Utica to play for the opportunity to play in the NHL, but you want to put them in a position to succeed and give them the best opportunity of, you know, playing well and helping themselves and helping the team. And so I always thought the Chicago, when they were the Chicago Wolves, like, you know, center of the continent. You can get anywhere, whether the Canucks were at home or on the road, direct flights. That was a perfect setup. Even Winnipeg was pretty good when they were the Manitoba Moose for a while there. 2-hour flight with the time change. Guy could get an 8 a.m. flight in Winnipeg and be here for the morning skate, and it wasn't an onerous travel day.
No.
But
even then, the dream to have a team localized and here in the market was talked about all the time.
Sure.
Like, it was always like, let's get a team here. And the Canucks, like, make no mistake, the Canucks were close. Like, they looked at Seattle. They negotiated with Abbotsford. Like, Aquilini wanted the world, though. And, like, no surprise. I don't think anyone's surprised there. But the story I heard was that they wanted land. Like, they want to put that team there. The trade-off was they were going to get land to develop. And Abbotsford said, no, we're not doing that. And bridges were burned. And it doesn't look like that's ever going to be opened again to an opportunity. And I don't think – is Langley up to – standards? Like, is that possible, do you think?
I would say no. It's a great facility for what it is at the BC Hockey League, but I don't think that it's but there's talk of Surrey building a bigger rink, sort of in that 6,000 range. That
I honestly believe that a team, like, they talk about, oh, like, Utica and all these fans, like, I think it's and the atmosphere and how important that is. I think that if you have a Canucks farm team that's good, and you have a great farm system, and you have that team in Surrey, I think it would do bananas business.
Well, I look at Winnipeg and San Jose, both have their farm teams play in the NHL rink, and we've been down in San Jose where, you know, the Barracudas will play an afternoon game, and the Sharks play at night. And maybe that's asking too much, but there are a lot of hardcore hockey fans that would be in for the double dip, especially, as you said, like, if it was a good farm team and the interest in prospects has never been higher. The one thing there, and keep in mind that it's always a business, like any, beer or popcorn or whatever sold at Rogers Arena, goes in the pockets of the owners. Like, they own the rink. They're getting a big cut. So, would they be interested in 36 event nights a year on top of what they've got? I mean, concerts are big business for them. So I'm not sure that you could slide another, hockey team with a full schedule into Rogers Arena, but I'm sure it's been looked at as well.
LA has like multiple teams.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So they could definitely do it.
So something to consider, again, the lease with Utica, or the arrangement with Utica, set to expire at the end of next season. So one more season. Are they going to complete the comeback? Are you believing in the Comets to come all the – because the Leafs are probably going to get an airlift now, and they'll get –
Yeah, they're going to get their stars back, right? Like, they'll get Kapanen, Dermott, Janssen. Like,
it sounded like Demko has been very good in two of the three games, certainly. So no surprise there. As we said, Reed Boucher is back. I haven't heard a ton about guys like Goldie. I saw Tyler Motte scored a goal.
Right.
So, but Chaput has been the guy, as he has been all season. And we talked about this last week. Like, he's a very good, more than adequate
great
American Hockey Leaguer.
For sure. Yeah. And he's kind of been the anchor for their first line for a while.
Are we any further though? Like, is it Chaput or is it Chaput? Do we know? Is he one thing here and one thing there?
I mean,
it sort of sounds like it was, because with Green, when it was with Green down there, it was Chaput, right?
What? How do you say it?
Oh, I say Chaput.
No, but you just
the coach always said Chaput.
Chaput.
And put the hard T at the end.
Yeah, but it's just it seemed like he had a little French accent that he added to it. No, he's like very aggressively Chaput. I'm thinking I'm going to go with Green maybe. I've known him as Chaput forever, so it's gonna be hard for me to turn. I think the big name one is Elias.
All right, but you gotta hold on here because we're gonna get to him. But as part of the great reveal, we're saving our Elias Pettersson talk till the end here.
Like, okay, the extra 3 minutes.
Yes, he makes our sort of one of our top picks. Right. I want to talk about Brock Besser, who was announced this week as a finalist for the Calder. As he should have been, but I was glad.
He should have been?
Yeah, I do. It's been a great year. It's been a great year for rookies. And we talked about Heischer. Like, he didn't make the grade for a 52-point guy, and his team makes the playoffs, and he doesn't get a sniff of one of the finalists on the Calder ballot.
Okay, but this is why.
It's going to be Barzal. Like,
for sure.
So, but it's Barzal. Just,
on my ballot, I was torn.
You're a voter, right. I'm not. So,
right.
Yep.
He had 55 points, but he only played 62 games. So he missed 20 games. Kyle Connor, I think, played 74 or something like that. I think, and Connor had more goals. That was a really hard one to choose between those two guys. I think because of the number of points that Keller got, it got him into the as a finalist. Barzal, obviously, home run pick, and he's going to win, and it's going to be unanimous. Like, everyone's going to pick Barzal.
And they should.
But ultimately, when I broke it down, like, Brock Besser had more of an impact in Vancouver than Kyle Connor ever could have with the Jets. And Connor played on an incredible line. Like, I argue that it's the best. I think it's the best line in hockey. And Scheifele missed 22 games. He played 60, still had 60 points. Wheeler had 92 points this season, and Connor was on that line. And Besser gets shuttled in to the one of the worst offensive teams in the league. I think second last year in goals. He bumps them up. They got to sixth last this year, and it was all because of him. They went from the second worst power play for 3 years collectively into a top 10 power play. It was in the top 10 all year from the moment they made the switch in mid-November. And up to that point, he was on the second unit, and he was in that bumper spot. Like, I can't, like.
The one that made the coach giggle in Buffalo.
Right. But looking back, talk about regret. Like, that should have been a way bigger story. Like, we should have been grilling him on that far more than we were. I think Besser had like a massive impact. And when the season finally ended, he had a hand in half of the Canucks goals. I had to include him. And I guess a lot of other people did outside of Vancouver, because that's why he ended up being a finalist.
Right. And people out here always freak out about Eastern bias. Like, I was glad to see Besser made the grade, and Keller in a market like Arizona, wasn't overlooked in a year that had not just Connor, Charlie McAvoy, Pierre-Luc Dubois had a terrific finish for his rookie season in Columbus, again, playing on a really good line. There were others, Yanni Gourde, a product, I think, of his environment down in Tampa and a little bit older. But I was glad to see Besser's season recognized. Like, it was a great year for him. The All-Star stuff, we know that. The month of December where he was unstoppable.
It was great.
And good for him. Now, did you see the photo of Brock Besser this week?
No.
You didn't see
in
that?
Hawaii?
Yeah.
He's scuba diving. With his cast?
With a cast on, a massive cast on his right wrist.
Okay.
There he is. And the flow underwater.
Oh, you can see the flow.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. Like, he's got the goggles on, but it doesn't affect the flow is there. But, like, damn, he's got a big cast on that right wrist.
Someone saw him at the airport on the way and told me how big it was. But he can't move it for 4 weeks. Like, it can't move. I think it's a little bit more serious than people let on. And I think it's hampered him a little bit more than people realize. I do think when he's at the award show, he honestly should give a shout out to the Provies, because let's be real. He was not on the map out east until that time when all those guys said Keller's the front. All those guys on Sportsnet and Hockey Night said Keller's the front runner, and Friedman went on. Then they didn't even mention Besser in the list. And, you know, I and others said, we are going to fucking change Friedman's mind. We are now going to change his mind. And much was written. The Flow nickname took off. T-shirts were made. Sweatshirts were made. Everything blew up. And damn it, Friedman changed his goddamn mind! And that influenced everything. And that's why I believe I'm going to pat myself on the back, right? Like, get out the self back patting machine. Bring it out! Wheel it out here! I want it! I want fucking pats because I said we're going to change his mind. We changed his mind. And when Friedman got on board, everything changed. He's got that kind of power and that kind of influence because everyone watches Hockey Night. It's, you know, it's the hub of everything. And all of a sudden after that, Besser was considered lasted about 3 weeks. He was all of a sudden the front runner for the Calder. And that momentum carried him to the end of the season when, at the end, usually it's a points race. Even though he didn't have the most points, he still ends up as one of the finalists.
One of the things I loved the most about Brock Besser's season was, he scored when the lights were brightest, too. Like the hat trick on a Saturday night against Sidney Crosby on national television. And the Penguins, and then he goes into Pittsburgh and two more again. Like, he just lit up the Penguins and Matt Murray, that storyline. But in Toronto on that Saturday night in January, he makes the play where he bats the puck out of the air. You know, Carey Price, that was maybe my favorite goal that he scored all year, where Price charges out. Oh, like, man, there's nothing, there's nothing to shoot at.
I could watch that all day, man. I went, when I did a Besser story last week, he mentioned that to me in the interview, and I went back and watched it. And I thought, like, fuck, that's so great, man. I almost wanted, like, it's in the middle of the first round. Like, I wanted to tweet it out, like, watch this goal again. But I thought, you know what? That's.
But it was almost like he was like, further, come out more. Come on, keep coming, more. And he just rips that one. And then Henrik Lundqvist, too. Like, I think those are the last goals that he scored. And there was that one in the final minute of play, and he takes the pass on his backhand. And, you know, like, a lot of guys would have panicked, no panic whatsoever. And Lundqvist looks like he's in a good position, and Besser just ripped it past him as well. So, you know, he scored against Pekka-Rinne. Like, he beat really good goaltenders too. And I don't know if that factors into people's, voting, but if you really go deep and break it down, like, the quality of, you know, he wasn't lighting up backups and getting cheap goals. Like, he was scoring big league, big time, big boy goals.
Yeah, and the question is now, like, can he do it again? And it's got a lot of fallout from that, because it's going to impact his next contract. And I think that his camp, his side, his agent wants to wait another year, even though logically you would think that he would want to cash in now because he had such a great rookie season. And the Canucks actually want to try to sign him now, thinking that, you know, he's going to have another, you know, bigger year next year. And when you break, like, I was sort of breaking it down, like, looking at, like, why does his agent, like, why do they believe that he can do more than this next year? Because he went on, like, a 2-month stretch where he led the league in goals. He was at a 20% shooting percentage in that run. Like, what are the chances? Like, I think he scored 19 of his goals in 28 games. Like, what are the chances he does all that again? But then you start looking at, well, he wasn't on that first power play unit for 6 weeks, like 14 games. And he had one power play goal from that time. He was among the league leaders after that when they finally put him in the spot. He's for sure starting next year in the spot. And the first couple of months, he was averaging 15, 16 minutes a game. And when you talk about him coming up in the big moments, Horvat goes down, broken foot. Next 8-10 games, he scores 8 goals. And yeah, clutch. Yeah, the team lost, but they needed something, and he came up, he stepped to the floor, and he did what we always hoped Louis Erickson would do. He said, like, I'm leading you guys. It wasn't enough. There was nothing to lead, but he did his best, and he had 8 goals in those 10 games, and a big part of that is he was playing 18 minutes. Now, in the last, like, after, I think there were 16 games after the All-Star break, and he averaged 18.43. That's how next season is going to start. He is going to be on the top line, and he is going to be playing 18 and a half minutes a game. So more, even if you think, well, the shooting percentage ended the year at 16%, that could tail off a bit. Even if you think that, even though he says he's going to have healthier wrist, and we know what happened after the injury, the shooting percentage went way down. But even if you think that shooting percentage is going to fall, he's going to get a lot more opportunities to shoot pucks next year.
I do think that the power play is going to be interesting. I mean, Newell Brown earned his money this year. We talked about those changes in Los Angeles in November. And since then, I think they were the second best power play in the league after that, which is really remarkable when you think of where they finished in the standings with the second best power play from mid-November on. But now the Twins are gone. Vanek obviously left as well. Like, what is that power play going to look like? And they scored 53 power play goals. Like, that's going to be tough to replicate. For a team that finished 29th in 5-on-5 goals this past season, if they can't get anywhere close to that kind of power play production, you know, it puts a real premium on even strength scoring. And, you know, a full season of Besser should help. We'll see what Pettersson can bring to the mix. But I was looking at it this morning. When you look at returning players, you know who the top three even strength goal scorers on the Vancouver Canucks were last season?
Wow.
The guys that are coming back.
Well, Besser.
Besser,
one.
Yeah.
Damn.
Horvat.
I would guess Horvat and Berchi?
No.
Horvat.
Say it. You know you want to. All 11 of his goals. Brandon Sutter.
No, really?
Was third among returning Canucks in even strength goal scoring.
He went on a nice run at the end of the season. He had 8 points in those final 9 games. He led the team. I don't know. Those points count? I'm going to have to ask Jim on that.
I tried to ask Jim. I asked him at the end of the season. And what did apparently, you ask him? Yeah, apparently this year they did count. last year for Besser, they did. Interesting as they start, and we're going to get to Pettersson here in a sec, but and this kind of dovetails in. Like it's starting to get a little crowded on the right side, and I'm not building a depth chart in mid-April, but Besser's got a spot, Vertanen's got a spot, right. Gagne plays the right side, Eriksson generally plays right wing, can play both sides, but
Eriksson's going to have to play left side.
But Pettersson, like they're going to find a spot.
Pettersson's got to play the right side.
Right. So now you've got Besser, like, you know, where is Vertanen?
Third line with Sutter.
So Pettersson's going to be second line?
Yeah. That's where he's got to play. He can't play. You can't put him on the third or fourth line.
Well, I know what happens if you put him on the third line.
Nothing.
Right. But what about Vertanen then? Like, Vertanen just had a decent finish to his season.
He's a good two-way forward.
But if he's on your third line, you know where.
I think we're all. We've all come to terms, haven't we? He's not going to be a 60-point player. You know that, right?
Vertanen.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely.
So he's a good defensive two-way player with speed that can help out a third line. It's just
so then Gagne's going to be on your fourth.
I don't like people get mad that I don't like. It's not like I don't like. I certainly don't like Sutter playing 17 and a half minutes. I think if he were playing 14 minutes, I'd be way happier with that. But yeah, that's where Vertanen's got to play. Like Pettersson to me, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Pettersson doesn't make the team. And maybe they got plans for him to play in the AHL this year and all of that. But I know Gradin thought he should be playing this year, and I don't buy the weight argument at all. So I would have him penciled in on that second line on the right side. I'd be chasing a center for him to play with creativity and brains, and I'd have Vertanen. You know, trying to make his deal on the. I'd have Vertanen on the power play though. I'd give him the Sutter matchup. This is what I would do. I'd have Sutter playing 14 minutes a game. I'd have Vertanen spending his even strength time there. I'd have Vertanen killing penalties, and I'd have Vertanen playing the power play. So that would get him up to enough minutes where he'd take some. Hopefully, if it's there for him to take a significant step, it would be he'd have the air to do it.
We've spoken about this before. You wrote about it, and it came through again. I love, like, it comes across almost as bravado, and yet if anybody knows anything about Thomas Gradin, there isn't an ounce of bravado in the man, but, like, his conviction that he knew that this was a possibility, and he wasn't predicting that Pettersson was going to win absolutely everything and just light the Swedish Elite League on fire. But I love the conviction that, damn it, he knew.
Can you, like, if I could describe the conversation, and I have teased it for a couple of months. I talked to him a while ago, February, and I was like, so are you're surprised? Like, you know, I asked most people in the organization, like, you're surprised by Pettersson. Come on. And he said, no, not at all. And it was just total, like, deadpan. And then I asked him like three or four questions that built basically the same thing. I'm going like, hold on. You knew that he could lead the Swedish Elite League in points. And he would just deadpan. Yes. Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? Okay, Thomas. So you came over here and you told people in the Canucks organization that this kid before the draft, you told the people in the organization in a meeting, you said that this kid could lead the Swedish Elite League in points. I did say that. I was like, oh my God, Thomas, this is crazy. And he would just have that total deadpan, like no big deal. Of course I did.
Right. So somebody in the organization, then the follow-up has to be, Thomas, can we win the draft lottery on Saturday? And if he says yes, get on a flight now. There's a seat waiting for you on the set. You're our guy. Forget Jim. We'll pull him back. You're going to the draft lottery to represent the Canucks.
And he said that, like, people didn't believe him. Like, I mean, who would? Well, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, if he came in and said that, you'd be like, come on. Like, look at this. And the big topic with Pettersson is always his weight. And then Gradin said, and I mean, he didn't. The next stage was the majority didn't believe him, and they had to come and see him play. And when they did come to see him play, a lot more of them became convinced that he had the type of talent to do what he's been able to do this year.
And I got to admit, like, I tried to temper my enthusiasm as the season went along. Like, I watched from an arm's length. The videos are out there. Highlights are highlights, though, right? Like, people post highlights because there's something that you should see. And, like, it seemed like on a weekly basis, this guy would outdo himself, and the goals were getting more spectacular, and the shot. And then it got to the playoffs, and okay, let's see what the playoffs bring. Like, he had a great regular season. That's terrific. I'm starting to buy in. And the playoffs come, and, like, he ratchets up a notch or two to the point where, like, he's doing stuff that nobody in his age group has ever done. The highlights, again, are spectacular. Like, I'm excited now. Like, and I think there's a legitimate reason to be excited, and that's where I come back to clear a spot. Like, I don't want to hear he's got to earn this spot. Like, give him every opportunity to make this team and play here next year and give the people what they want, rather than always downplaying when we point to the number of good young players that are doing amazing things in the National Hockey League and in the playoffs too.
Dude, I could not agree with you anymore on this. I want them to say this: he is incredible. He can do incredible things, and it's on us to find the guys for him to play with to show you that he can do these incredible things in the NHL. I don't even want him putting on weight. Like, all this talk about, oh, he weighs as much as my leg, or oh, he's only a buck 60. I don't fucking care. I want him doing exactly what he's doing right now in the NHL, because guess what? Like, that type of player is the type of player that's shining right now in the NHL. It is a totally different league than it was even 5 years ago. And I think players like him, built like him, can have a ton of success. And if you watch, you watch those replays, watch how quick he is. It's the quickness of his dangle. Like, he's not the fastest skater. He doesn't have the hardest shot or the greatest wrist shot, but he gets off that shot so incredibly quick. And his dangle is so fast, the way he moves the puck. I would not want to risk losing any of that, man. I would say, like, let's just see, like, bring him as is. Like, if you want to try to get him a bit stronger, that's fine. But I hear some people like, he's got to put on 20 pounds. And if he were 20 pounds heavier, he would have been the first overall pick. No, fuck no. If he was 20 pounds heavier, he wouldn't have this kind of quickness. He wouldn't have this kind of, like, creativity and offensive ability. Bring him in as is and let's fucking go, baby. Let's watch him.
Like, Mitch Marner. Nobody's saying Mitch Marner's got to put on weight. Ray made the point. Like, Jake Gensel. Patterson weighs more right now than Jake Gensel, who just scored four goals the other day. And how's he doing it? He's surrounded by very, very good players in Pittsburgh, but puts himself in the right spot. He's fast. He's smart. Like, just play this guy. Just bring him in and play him next season. And that's what made, and you pointed that out in the column too, these comments by the Swedish coach about, like, he's got to come to this camp or whatever on the weekend and prove something. Like, he's just been the best player in your domestic league, and he's going to come and we'll see what he can do.
What's the worst? Like, can you imagine if, like, Canada was putting together its World Championship League, Connor McDavid had just had 110 points in the NHL, led the league in the NHL, and somehow the World Championship was after their playoffs. He had just won the Conn Smythe. The Oilers had just won the Stanley Cup. McDavid had just won the Conn Smythe. He had just won the Art Ross. He's going to win the Hart. And, like, and Babcock
if he comes to camp and has a good camp.
Babcock's saying, we got to see him in these exhibition games to know for sure whether he's on the world championship team. Like, it was absurd.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe what I was reading when I was reading these tweets that Dhaliwal, great on Dhaliwal for getting the interview with this Swedish coach of this world championship team. But I was floored. Like, what more can this kid do? He is your best player. He just carved your best league. He dominated all your best players. And you're still saying he's got to fight for a job? How? Like, how is he not? Like, what? Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I really, like, talk about no sense. Like, that makes none.
I was mad. It made another thing that made me mad.
But I hope it makes him mad. Like, I don't know. Does this
who Patterson?
Yeah. Like, what if he goes to this camp and takes it up another notch?
Right. Yeah. I would.
The big FU to the coach.
Certainly, if I was his agent, I would be like mad. Like, this is. Can you imagine if instead of the world championship team, he had arrived in Utica, and calls like, I don't know if I'm putting him in the lineup. I'm not so sure. Like, has he earned it? Can we see him in a couple practices? I haven't practiced with him yet.
Like Cole Lind, I get, has been playing against junior guys, and it is a step up. But
sure.
Pettersson and Dahlin to a lesser degree, and Yastrzyk, like they've been playing pro hockey. So
right, but Pettersson's on.
I understand, right, but I'm just talking.
This is one of the best hockey leagues in the world.
Absolutely.
And he made all these guys look Mickey Mouse.
Well,
like,
hopefully he never sees Utica, as great a hockey town as I'm told it is. Right. I'm hoping he never,
never meets Trent Culp. Like, no. I'm so on board that, man. Keep him away from Colin Sutter.
All right, but this is now, we've worked our way to the end of the podcast. It's been a good one, a long one today. So bonus material. But help me out here, because as much as I've tried to make sense of everything that's gone on with Elias Pettersson this year, what was with the spray tan? Did you see the photo?
That's a Swedish thing.
The gold helmet, I get. Like, they wear the gold helmet when they win championships. But he's holding the team trophy or the league trophy, and he's been spray tanned somehow. Yeah. Like,
is there a room for it?
I don't know. Like that kind of creeped me out. Like, does that come with him? Like, is he going to bring spray tanning stuff to Vancouver?
No, I think they're obsessed with gold. I don't know. I have no explanation. I didn't dive into it enough to find out why.
Did you see the people that had photoshopped the Stanley Cup into the photo?
No,
really? That was good. No, he's standing there with the gold helmet, the spray tan, and he's got the Stanley Cup cradled in his arms. That'll only be a couple years from now, I think.
No, I thought you were going to bring up the A&W Burger guy again.
No, I left that last week, but it
got a lot of attention.
I understand that. Yeah, so I hit on a nerve.
People, it did, and I thought about it a lot. Like, I thought, you know, why do I like? Because I did come to the conclusion that I liked. I like the fact that they're in London, and I like the fact that Londoners are paying their £2 and they're liking the burger. And I was like, why do I like this commercial? And I feel that, like, we're all looking for some sort of validation, right? Like, if other people, like, if I hear, like, other people in another country saying, like, oh my God, like, these Canadian, like, fast food burgers are incredible. Like, honestly, in my head, I've been thinking about it a lot, thinking, like, they must be good. Like, the people in London love them. They must be good. And I think in some small way, we're all out there looking for that pat on the back. We're all out there looking for that validation.
Apparently you are. That's been my takeaway from this session today.
Are you not looking for a pat on the back?
No, because I too have spent way too much time this past week thinking about this ad, because there's that one and that stupid singing Tim Hortons coffee guy that's driving me nuts too. But the A&W guy, like, so I put, work with me here, but turn it in reverse. So you leave here, you leave the podcast studio, you're out on the street,
right.
And some guy comes up to you and says, these are the best Polish sausages in Poland.
Right. I would try it.
You're gonna go fuck off. Like, they're available in Poland. Like, well, who cares? Like, I don't like Polish sausage. Like, no, some guy just accosts you on the street and is like force feeding you Polish sausage that you can only get.
You can only get
in Poland. Like, you.
Yeah. From the Londoner's perspective, it makes less sense. But from me living in Canada,
camera crew in your face,
I feel like our burgers are getting validated. Like, I look at that thinking, like, wow, they like our burger.
I've never once felt like we were burger shamed in this country.
Really?
No.
You don't get mad that there's not like In-N-Out here.
No.
You don't wish that there was White Castle.
I went to Shake Shack in Vegas, and I kind of underwhelmed, quite frankly. So I see that ad and I'm still like, it's a time limited offer. Like, it's coming to the end here in April. Thank God. But your point last week was a good one that, like,
yeah,
if he was going
power.
Anywhere, go to Texas,
right,
and say, like, fuck you guys. Yeah. You know, right. We've got, like, we know how to make beef and hamburgers. Yeah. Enough of this, Texas. Right. Like, everything's bigger in Texas. Here's the biggest burger in the world. But going to London, like I'm surprised the people on the street are like, screw off. I just want fish and chips. Like, do you sell? Yes. Is that on the menu? Like, if I'm coming to Canada, I'm not just going to eat hamburgers. I want some, like, comfort food.
Bangers
you have? Yeah. And then the guy's going to go, no, we just, it's a burger joint. And then, like, they're going to go, well, I'm not going to bother.
I don't know, man. I'm into the commercial. I may, if not for the stupid names that they have for those A&W burgers, I really wanted to get one. But I will pass on that.
The other commercial that pisses me off right now, and it's been there a while. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a car commercial where the mom is running a marathon and the family, they all jump in their car and they drive to some point along the route to cheer the mom on. Like, the mom has been busting her ass training for this marathon, and the best the family can do is drive to some point along the route just to get out and cheer her, and then I think they get back in the car and they leave. They drive, and she's running on in the marathon.
Well, that's what you do. That's how you support marathon runners, isn't it?
I don't know. I've not been know any. I'm not one, but I just thought, like, if I'm the wife or the mom, I'm like, screw you guys. Like, I've been training for this thing for months, and all you can do
let
is
me
drive.
Run.
Yeah. So I don't like that ad. That one bugs me.
And I guess we'll close it on this. Like, I think that Seattle. And when do you think the GM's going to be hired there?
Probably a year out.
A year out.
So we're still.
I think like Mike, like that's a real possibility there. I think that could. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it is for sure a possibility. Which
the
would
dream
be,
team the, bring together the dream, bring or. The,
It's possible, yeah. There's a scenario where it could happen, where the old bring the boys back together.
Like Lawrence seems like he's kind of biding his time here. The Carolina thing, we find out, is fallen by the wayside.
Oh, man. Well, but so, not no, so, like it's to me, it's crazy that that team had that much success and had that many, like they had some really good contracts. Cap was handled extremely well with that team. Like even the Luongo ones worked out. I mean, it's not worked out in the Canucks' favor, but it's certainly shown that he was the right guy to bet on for a contract like that. It's been difficult for him to get back into the NHL. So we'll see what happens there. But that
does AV ride it out until
then? It looked like a clown show in Carolina, man. Like I heard the offers were going down. Like they was someone reported $400,000. Yeah. I heard it went down after that, man. Like fuck.
Does AV sit it out until Seattle, or does he get back in? I think he gets back in.
I think he's too good. Like, he's too decorated not to get another 5-year offer soon enough.
And I don't think
Bill Peters can get a job immediately. I'm sure AV can.
Well, and I just, at this stage of his career, I mean, he's been to the final twice, hasn't been able to win it. The idea of starting on the ground floor, and I know what Vegas has done. I think he's going to try to handpick a position that'll allow him a chance to win and win now. So we'll see how it goes.
Dallas?
A lot of people pointing to Dallas. We'll see. Let's see what the playoffs bring. I mean, there's still a chance that, second round team, if they flame out. So I'm not sure Barry Trotz is totally out of the woods, although that window looks like it's probably closing there in Washington.
Anaheim? So. Try to get the old boys. Try to get Kess back.
Good old Kess. All right, let's finish with this. Speaking of old boys. Tommy V, it didn't go so well for him in Columbus.
Oh, man, what happened?
Playoffs are a different animal. We know that, right?
Like in the first game.
Oh, okay. So he had a little bit of success in the first game. Yeah, both his points in the playoffs came in that first game. And he's a complimentary piece. Like, they've got way bigger issues in Columbus trying to figure out how to take that next leap forward. But unfortunately,
he did help get them there. They went 13-2-2 down
the
stretch.
Good. He was almost a point of game guy. And he had a great regular season. He's a very good regular season player still.
He's the king of the regular season.
Playoffs. But playoffs, time and space.
It's so weird because he's great in those time and space situations. And like when you watch him, he is all about like getting in front of the net and playing in those so-called tough areas. And like logically, it should work for him in the playoffs, but I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what happens. I think I'd have to break down what was he doing during the pregame skates, during the warmups. Was he staying out for the full thing? Maybe he was trying to do too much. It is bizarre to see a guy have that much success in the regular season. And what did he play in the last game? Like, not even
8.5 minutes, one shift in the final 13. Oh, and, man. You know, and they're chasing that game and they need goals to come back. Fuck. And yeah, so, you know, the ice time is on Torts. I mean, that's Torts' decision. We know that Tommy would like to play more. Always. The disconnect there. And it's unfortunate because he's such a good guy. We certainly enjoyed being around him on a daily basis. But, you know, the track record is what the track record is now when it comes to the playoffs and post-trade deadlines. Although, as we said, regular season he was fine. But you know, the knock is that come playoffs, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen for him.
Tommy Gunn with Pettersson, second line?
Well, I'm open to anything, because I think Seattle Rice, I know they got to overhaul the defense, and I do think the left side needs some work. So I think on the right side, the Canucks are fairly fixed with the people they've got, but I do think there's room for some offensive thrust on the left side. So Tommy can play the left side. I haven't closed that door entirely in my mind on Tommy Vanek, but he said he's only coming with a, you know, no trade deal. So,
and he can talk with all the bravado in the world when it comes to when it's happening in September or it's August and he still doesn't have a contract. He's not going to have.
Right. But do you honestly think after this year,
he just had the same year last year?
I know, but
he had an identical season.
But do you think a playoff team would trade for him?
Like how many, I see what you're saying.
So like, he wants to bring his family. Like, you know, I don't think people fully realized that like his family was in Minnesota, you know, and he's not the only guy in the league that does that, but he wants a place where he can bring his family and set up. Yeah. And I understand that that's got to be tough. Like, you know, even though you're on the road half the season, but still, like he lit up in those games where the Canucks were back in Minnesota and his kids were running around the rink and stuff. So if he comes,
throw him his little no trade. Like, who cares? What are you going to get? Motten, Jokinen? Like,
no, I don't think you're getting anything. I don't think he needs the no trade because I think now, he's been traded to just about every team in the league.
Yeah. So, he comes back for, you know, a 1 year deal and they give him a no trade, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it because it's going to be the same thing next year. No one's going to want him. Everyone's going to point to the same thing. Doesn't have playoff success. How do you trade for him?
I don't know. If you're bringing Vanek back, are we bringing Gully back, Glenn Gullickson?
I heard that being pitched. Why would Gully be? I don't see why he'd be seen as an option.
I don't think he's going to get another head coaching gig. He's had two.
Yeah, but
now.
Why bring him in here to be an assistant?
I think the point was that he worked well with young players. Monahan and Goudreau both had pretty good seasons in Calgary.
Okay.
He's a good guy. I have no problems with
Yeah, he's
Glenn
a good guy.
Gullickson.
You're right. If you got,
and I do wonder. I wonder if they're going to.
You need an assistant coach of good guys. He's the guy.
No, but I do wonder. Like, we've talked about this on podcast past. Like, you're coming back with the same management and coaching staff that just delivered this past season, save for the final nine games.
That's true.
Like, they were 30th and pushing 31st there for the longest time. And we see it too. Like, you've got Travis, you got Baumgartner, and you've got Newell Brown on the bench. And then after every game, we jump on the elevator to come down, and there's the upstairs coaching staff of Doug Jarvis, Malhotra, and Kuche. And Travis Green inherited Doug Jarvis, who is a terrific hockey man through and through, has been at this for a long, long time. But I just wonder if there is going to be a change. Would that be the one piece? Malhotra's new on the job. He was hired. Kuche has been with the organization for a while. I think they want to give him a little bit of a run.
Okay.
Doug Jarvis.
Gully comes in, replaces
I'm not saying,
Jarvis,
I'm not saying
works
it's
with young guys,
Gullickson,
and does the PK. Okay.
But I do
I'm on board.
If there is going to be a change in the coaching staff, I think that's like Newell Brown did his part on the power play. Absolutely. Baumgartner and Green are tight. That's not going to change.
The PK was a huge disappointment. You're right.
So there you go.
I'm on board. You got me.
All right.
You got me convinced.
So
Gully!
Vanek comes back.
Gully's in.
Gully's in, and you get your 250 teen burger, and apparently everybody's happy. PatCast, the presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. And again, as the sun is shining, great time to get out there and walk the lot, see what is right for you if you're in the market for a new ride. 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam. On to the draft lottery Saturday night. We'll find out.
This is the year!
Yes or no, give me a number. Where are the Canucks going to pick? 1 through 9. They can't pick 4 or 5. We know that. Well, they can through trade, but in the lottery itself, it's 1, 2, 3 or 6, 7, 8, 9.
And but I'm on an incredible run of predictions.
Oh, God, don't even.
In the last 15 games, everyone was thinking the Canucks wouldn't even win one or may not win 1 or 2. I predicted they would win 6.
Really?
And in fact, they won.
I haven't heard this before.
Exactly. This is news they to me. Won exactly 6. Then, when the Leafs lost the first 2 games in the Bruins series, I went on the air on Pratt's show and I said the Leafs are absolutely going to win this next game. They did. Then they lost, and I nailed another Leaf pick in there anyway.
Just
there
was give me a number.
There was another Leaf pick. Also predicted the Eagles would win the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Everyone said I was crazy. I nailed that too. To add to my string of incredible predictions, that is
go.
Unbelievable
Here
hard
we
to
go.
Take. The Canucks will be drafting number 7.
There's a letdown. Talk about ending the show on a downer. You were the guy that said everybody was fired up. Now you're saying seven.
I feel seven.
All right. Botch is the guy that you blame when those lottery balls bounce around. We'll find out what happens. Let's get out of here. We got to get spray tan so that we look like Pedersen the next time we do the podcast. And the next time we talk to you, we'll know where the Canucks are picking, or at least where the lottery has them set to select. That's going to do it for the podcast here on Province.